way in the student group, it's so much so that we now consider two of our values to be emotional intelligence as well as past pain and healing. So this topic was first laid on my heart a few years ago when I started discipling some of the students and began to see that their worldview was different than mine and their view of God was different than mine. It occurred to me, they didn't see him like I did, for better or for worse, but I think as I got into it more, I realized they didn't see him the way I did because he didn't show up in the way they expected him to show up in previous times of their life. And I began to see that in my own life. The specific situations are different, it seems like, for each one of them. But oftentimes, it involves a relationship of one or both of their parents and or close friends, which was definitely the case for me. I think many of you know, I feel like I've spoken on it several times here. The relationship with my mom was pretty strained. Around the time I turned 18, my dad was distant. I got divorced when I was 5, and he moved out to Arizona when I was 8. Both those relationships have been reconciled, which is really cool, and that's definitely part of my healing journey. But it wasn't until I started to work with others that I saw the void in my own life, specifically in the field of past pain and healing. And I didn't understand the magnitude in which that affected the way I currently viewed the world. And so I used to brag in life. I had no feeling, both physically and emotionally. So I was a gymnast for 10 years, and I have fierce nerve damage. So I only feel about 10% of the world around me, which is sometimes cool and sometimes not cool. But I used to translate that to my emotions as well. Just like, I don't feel. People are like, what do you mean? Well, physically and emotionally. Like, it just wasn't something I even really cared about. Because I had blocked off several of the emotions, which resulted in an ever-present state of numbness for me. I never understood the point of emotions because my family, I would assume like most of your families, didn't emphasize it. In fact, we never were encouraged to define our emotions or to share emotions in a group. And whatever we did, my three brothers and I were definitely not allowed to cry. My mom was, because she was a single mom of 4 boys. So she was crying frequently, especially since I was one of those boys. But we were never told to cry, encouraged to, and we just never talked about any of it. And so I grew up believing that emotions were not only bad, but that there were good and bad ones, and that to fully understand them, you simply need to be a girl, because girls are emotional, guys are not. It's very simple. And so, but God has been faithful to me through my whole journey. It's only become evident in recent years. When my mom and I got to the point of separating from each other about a decade ago now, I vowed to myself one night while crying in my car that I would never engage with those emotions again. Of course, at 18, I had no idea what I was talking about. But unfortunately, the deed was done, and I had locked off some of my emotions. I think of it in the way of, if you've seen Wreck-It Ralph, they lock away who Vanellope is in a little treasure box, and then later they go and release that. That's sort of like what I did to my emotions. Who's seen Wreck-It Ralph? Okay. I forget that when I use these references, if people haven't seen them, they're like, what are you talking about? So. Anyway, it's a great movie. It's one, I recommend it. You can go and check it out and you'll see what I'm talking about. But anyway, I didn't understand that I had actually only two emotions left at that point, rage and numbness. And numbness I define as the absence of emotions. And I didn't even see the full extent or the damage until Chelsea and I were halfway into our relationship. And it became evident that I was holding back and she was fully invested. And so later, along my healing path, I realized that it was because I had fear of allowing someone to get close to me, especially someone that could hurt me, drop me, and even worse, abandon me, like I had experienced by both of my parents growing up. Funny enough, it was actually fear that brought me back from that numbness. So Pat Sokol was visiting a few years ago. He did a marriage class to our group, I guess more so to this side of the room. And seeing as I had been dating for a couple of years, I was like, well, I should go. You know, I want to learn the mistakes not to make that you all are making, so that I could, I don't know, you know, be better, I guess. I don't know what I was thinking. But anyway, Brandon let me come, which was cool. And Pat really only spoke on two things. It was emotional awareness and assertiveness, a word in which I had never even heard before. And so I went up to him afterwards, and I was like, hey, Pat, so in a bragging way, you know, if someone has no emotion and has no interest in having emotion, what would happen to that person, you know, hypothetically? And he was like, well, they would lose their ability to feel, and they would just experience numbness. And regardless of if that's a true or false statement, it freaked me out enough to go, well, I need to change. and thus began my own healing path of walking through some of my own emotions. So I believe, after studying this for a while, that God's given us emotions for three reasons. The first one's simple. For those that take notes, now is your time. I don't take notes, so it always is weird to me. But anyway, Genesis 1 tells us that we are created in His image. We know that God has emotions. Therefore, we have emotions. It's profound, but very simple as well. The second two, which I'll spend a lot more time on today, I believe we've been given emotions to better communicate with God and with each other in a relational community, just like God does within the Trinity, so for communication. And lastly, and third, I'm sure there's lots of other reasons, but these are my three. I believe God's given us emotions to understand when we are and are not believing His promises correctly. So I'll give a couple examples of these second two, but before we do that, I just want to look at emotions as a whole. So God designed your emotions to be gauges, not guides. The pattern of your emotions will give you a reading on where your hope is because they are wired into what you believe and what you value and how much you value it. Meaning, emotions help us understand and empower us to make decisions, but they're not the sole motivation for those decisions. So a commonly used example that I've used with the students a lot is like a check engine light on a dashboard. Check engine light comes on, and when the car is trying to tell you something, and so if you ignore that light, it's foolishness. Anyone would tell you that. I was telling the students when I was teaching this a year ago, I had a roommate that took black electric tape and put it over it, and I was like, why would you do that? And he's like, it just annoyed me when it would come on. And I'm like, but that's so horrible. But that's what we've done with our emotions. I wish he could be here to share that. But anyway, of course, it'd be silly to ignore that check engine light because more damage could be done to your car as time goes on. But if we look at emotions as the lights on our dashboards of our souls, they inform us what's happening on the inside and they help us better understand what to do about it. Emotions themselves are neither good nor bad, which of course would be contrary to what most people believe. Another example of emotions being gauges would be if you step on a cactus, you'd feel pain because there are most likely needles sticking out of your foot, of course, if you don't have a shoe on. The pain in this scenario would be actually a good thing because it would inform you have needles sticking out of your foot and that you should do something about it. If you continue to walk without doing anything, you just ignore it, you do much more damage. Well, this is simply what our emotions are. Well, pain is neither good nor bad in this scenario. It's an indicator of something going on elsewhere. I found over the past year, while having several emotional conversations, that we definitely don't have the same definition for our emotions. Anger to someone might be frustration to someone else. Confusion to me could probably be annoyance to someone else. But the more you share emotions in context, in real relational conversations, especially if you define them, the greater understanding that you'll have when it comes to your own emotions and others' emotions. Recently, I've been reading up on some new stats of Generation Z, which would be the generation after the millennials. Generation Z would be born in 1999, so some of them might even be in this room. That's scary. Anyway, they're the newest generation on campus, and although they have similarities to, of course, the infamous millennials, which is everyone else on that side, they're quite different, especially in terms of their emotional intelligence. So this was a study done by Barna, and they specifically looked for this because it seems like generation after generation we've been failing in our understanding of our emotions and who we are. So emotional intelligence was actually a phrase coined back in the early 90s. It's used as a title of a New York Times bestselling book called Emotional Intelligence. But it was to argue that intelligence simply wasn't IQ, but EQ as well, that you have to have both. What this means is that Generation Z and millennials are not the first generations to struggle with understanding their emotions. Because if we wrote a book about it back in the 90s, this has been going on at least since the 70s then. And so it's not only this room that struggles with this, it's this side of the room as well, in my opinion. Our parents most likely struggle with it, and it's just become more visible throughout the years in these recent generations because of our inability to connect emotionally with one another. Granted, some of this is a result of what Josh was speaking about over the last couple weeks, which is how media and digital communication, in addition to medicating much of the pain we feel, they have removed the need for personal intimacy within relationships. But I bet I would be right if I said that several in this room, parents and students alike, grew up in environments where emotions were rarely defined and or discussed. Is that true or false? Seems like it's a true thing. So the next couple weeks, we're going to look at what I call the three R's of emotional healing. This is for you journalers. Again, I put notes in here to call them out, to make sure they know they can, you know, follow along here. Anyway, if you Google these three R's of emotional healing, you probably won't find them because I came up with them. So, but in my own life and in the lives of others that I've helped, it seems like there's three stages. First one would be what I call realization, the point at which you understand that pain exists and that it's unresolved and that it affects you currently. Reconciliation, the point at which you address said pain, and redemption, the path to rebuilding all the damage you did with while not engaging with the pain. And so, in order to get to these first few steps, though, we first need to understand that your emotions most likely need to be redefined and practiced and used, and that's what we're trying to do. Because so many of us have blocked them or downplayed them throughout our lives that we need to begin redefining them for the first time. And I think this page helps with that. Quick example I have on my journey when I began all this, shortly after that Pat Sokol story. So I was driving to a faith team a few years ago, and I was running late. Got close to the stoplight, and I saw that there were sirens and an emergency vehicle and police officers, and all the lanes are merging into one. And I got annoyed because I was going to be late because of some irresponsible driver, and they were clearly to blame for this. It's not that I didn't leave on time. It's someone else's fault. But as I got closer, I saw there was a motorcycle on the ground and a body bag lying next to it. So it didn't take long, of course, to realize that this was a fatality accident involving an SUV and a motorcycle, were most likely the SUV won. It was my turn to go red, and I, for some reason, looked across the crosswalk and saw this lady being handed a clipboard by a police officer. And before she grabbed it, she just reached around the police officer and hugged him and started crying. And anyway, that was all I saw, and I turned the corner, and the weirdest thing about this is I was crying, and this had never happened before. And I was like, what is it that I'm feeling right now? What is this strange wet stuff coming from my face? And anyway, because I'm very logical, I started thinking through it logically and go, well, I don't know quite what it is, but I'm feeling something for her. And I ended at the word compassion. So I'm feeling compassion for someone I've never met because she has no interest in filling out a clipboard of what happened. Whoever was on that motorcycle was someone that she knew. And this was just the best way that she could articulate it. And so, anyway, I began this several times over the next couple of years to where when I'd feel something, I'd stop and go, what was it that I felt? And it seemed like for the first time I was defining emotions, which you'd think, at least from doing elementary school spelling tests and stuff like that, I would have learned a long time ago. But I had never associated this heart feeling with the head understanding. And so that's what I'm going to encourage a lot of us to do. But I mentioned earlier, one of the purposes of emotions is to help us understand when we're believing God's promises and when we're not. I'm sure there's lots of examples. I just pulled a few. But one is in Joshua 1. God says to Joshua, be strong and brave. You must lead these people in the conquest of this land that I solemnly promised their ancestors that I would give to them. I repeat, be strong and brave. Don't be afraid and don't panic, for I, the Lord your God, am with you in all that you do. So at initial glance, you probably missed it like I did first couple of times I've read this passage, but God here spells out what's going to happen emotionally if Joshua stops believing the promise of God. So looking at it again, if Joshua is feeling strong and brave, it means he's believing that God will give him the land that was promised to him. But if Joshua is feeling afraid and begins to panic, it means he isn't believing the promise that God gave to him. So God has foresaw this and set this up. Another example, Paul, Philippians 4, it says, do not be anxious about anything. Instead, in every situation, through prayer and petition with thanksgiving, tell your requests to God. Appreciate that Mike led us through that this morning. And the peace of God that surpasses all understanding will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. So again, the promise being given here is that we will have peace if we tell our requests to God. But if you're feeling anxiety about anything, Paul's words, not mine, it's because you're not telling your requests to God. What's inferred here, of course, is that if you are telling them to God, you're trusting that God not only already knows them, but he'll do something about it, and that you don't have to. When you're believing that it all rests on you and you have to do something about it, thus the anxiety appears. And so, as I mentioned earlier, we've been taught that there are good and bad emotions. We base that on how some emotions make us feel, specifically in regards to pain. What if we viewed all emotions as a diagnostic tool for whether we're believing God's promises or not believing them? Then we wouldn't simply feel good or bad emotions. We'd only have gratitude that the emotions even exist and that they're a smoke signal alerting us that something needs to change. Or, of course, that we are believing the promises of God. Nothing needs to change because we're in alignment with God's heart. It's both sided. There isn't anything to be ashamed about when we aren't believing the promises of God. Mark 9 gives us this permission. So Jesus is standing in front of a family where the boy is demon-possessed, and the father says, Jesus asked the boy's father, how long has he been like this? From childhood, the father answered. It is often thrown him into fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. To which Jesus replies, if you can, I just wish I could have seen that. And the disciples being like, you know, and Jesus says, everybody's gracious. Everything is possible for one who believes. And immediately the boy's father says, I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. So this is to normalize that when we're not believing the promises of God, we shouldn't beat ourselves up. Because here Mark 9 gives us permission for that. It's like, yeah, I do believe as a whole, but in this moment, I'm struggling with belief. And Jesus is just like, well, then let's walk through this. And he reminds him, if you do believe, you know, it'll all be taken care of for you. So document, now I'll get to this, has been helpful in the student world. It came from a book called How We Love. Owen mentioned it. Joshua Smalltian went through it about a year and a half ago. I thought the soul words list, which is this, was really helpful, at least for understanding and breaking down emotions. There are 19 bolded emotional words that can be considered big emotions that are easily felt, and several other emotional words under each big word to better describe and drill down what the actual emotion is being felt. It helps to better articulate what's going on inside of all of us as we communicate to God and to others, especially rather than saying good, bad, happy, sad, which it seems like so common we're used to saying. So what I challenge the students with in my own life is I just go, you know, what are you feeling? We go, I don't know. Okay, well, look at this. Pick one of the big words. Anxious. Okay. What inside of anxiousness are you feeling? Insecure. You know, that I'm reading off of notes that I've never done this before. So, you know, that could be a real life example one, maybe. Anyway, I found it to be super helpful. That's why I didn't know if I had enough, so I gave them to just sort of scatter it throughout. But if you want more, I have more up here. One area of emotions that our cultures really struggle with is grieving, which is on the backside of this document. The students have really redefined what it means to grieve a situation, which has been counterculture to what we've been taught growing up. So grieving is often associated with death and or loss, which is definitely a part of grieving, but there's so much more to it. Psychology has what they call the stages of grief, and the seven are there. They're shock, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, testing, acceptance. So the first five don't necessarily have to be in that particular order. It's just most common. But to believe that you simply can feel shock, denial, anger, bargaining, and depression, I mean, at least that was a new concept for me that I had never felt before. And so, anyway, it's crucial, though, to have that understanding to even be able to walk onto the healing path, which is the next couple of weeks of what we're going to talk about. Most of the time, though, we get caught up in one of these phases, and most common is anger and depression. We never make it through the full stage or the full cycle, and that can be really harmful to the way we view the world around us, because then we're programmed just with this lens over us of, I'm angry at this situation, and suddenly you view other things through the lens of anger. And so something might not trigger you normally, but because you have this lens on, it is interpreted as a angry event. And it just reinforces and reinforces and reinforces and builds deeper and deeper and deeper until you remove that lens And you can even start to see clearly. And so, for me, my grievances involved what could have been of having a father in my house. So it's not necessarily that he wasn't there. I mean, that's a part of it. It's the fact that I had to grieve what could have been. Like, as I look around at other people, and I'm like, man, I didn't get to experience something. There's a loss there that I can grieve. And I can grieve the fact that he wasn't there. So there's two parts there. Of course, the situation with my mom, a parent abandoning me after 17 years. This one was a big one. I had to grieve surrendering all that I had to the transferring power of Christ in my everyday life. That's our church's vision statement. Back in 2015, when I made a choice to go, man, I will be a disciple of Christ. I will give him everything that I have. Like, there was a grieving of, you mean you want that and that and that? I don't know. It was a huge moment for me. There's been grievances when having to forgive others that have wronged me. And of course, when allowing others to forgive me when I've wronged them. So, how do you gain this emotional intelligence? Well, it's like any new language. You practice it in a real context. Dinner, work, friends and family, at the potluck out there. You share how you're actually feeling. How you doing? Good. How you doing? Good. How you doing? Oh, I'm upset. You want to talk about it? Not really. Not very helpful. How are you doing? I am feeling perplexed. Tell me about that. Define that for me. I mean, just imagine what it could do around those tables back there. So anyway, we need to start bringing awareness into our everyday life and stop, drop, and roll when you feel like disconnecting. Because disconnection usually is a red flag that there is something wrong and or unresolved pain or conflict within a specific situation that just occurred, and it's simply easier to disengage and move on rather than to sit with those feelings because they're uncomfortable. We're going to practice because it's challenging in the moment to always stop and engage with the emotions, but hindsight supposedly is always 20/20. So put your stuff down for a second. We're going to engage here. Ask yourself and answer this question to yourself. When's the last time you felt angry? Think about it. Think about the situation, the circumstances that caused it. Feel it well up inside of you. I should have given you all like beanbags or something. So. But anger is a strong one, which is why I start with it. Now ask yourself, was it actually anger or was it something else, such as frustration, annoyance, controlled, manipulated, furious, grouchy, grumpy, irritated, provoked, hateful, cold, icy, bitter, cynical? You better understand yourself in this moment that you're thinking about. So anger is commonly defined as unmet expectations. Therefore, do you recall having any expectations in the actual moment that weren't met? Still thinking about it. If so, were those expectations ever expressed? Or was the other person involved supposed to be a mind reader? Now, we get angry at people because they don't understand our expectations and meet them, but we never actually tell them the expectations. Let's try another one. Anxiety. Statistically, this side of the room is hosed. It's crazy. When you look at the statistics for the amount of anxiety that's popping up these days, but I'm convinced it's a whole room thing. Anyway, think about the last time you were anxious. You had anxiety. Let it well up there. Fear might be one that comes up. You know, you might get a little tingly on the inside. For me, that's how I define it. Do you relate anxiety to stress? Or are they different? Would you use those words interchangeably? Just think about that. Take it a step further. It's 2.0. What promise about God weren't you believing at that time? What? Don't talk to me. Talk to Paul. He wrote it. You know? Now think about this. What would have happened if when you felt anxious, you communicated to another person or to God the reason you were actually feeling anxious and surrendered to God and started relying on one of his promises instead? What would that do for you? What that would, well, it would remove the lens, and so you'd get to view the world in its real reality rather than through a fake lens. So this easy was exercise. If this exercise was easy for you, ask yourself if you do it regularly. Think about how your life would be changed if you did do it regularly. Husband's in the room talking to you. What if on your way home from work, you spent the drive thinking through a few examples of emotions you felt throughout the day, and then you defined them and shared them with your wife when you got home? Wives, same thing. 30 minutes before you unlock that door, you're downloading, what did I feel today? What actually happened? I like Abra's laugh. It just is, it's contagious. Yeah. What would dinner look like? What would you be modeling for your kids if they saw an intimate relationship taken to 2.0? I use the word intimacy, and in the group, our student group, we do this because intimacy is into me that you see. I didn't come up with that. It's all over the internet. Anyway, it's hard to see into you when we're only told the details of your day, or worse, nothing even about your day. We're left to guess what happened and how you're feeling based on body language, perceptions, assumptions, and even worse, misinterpretation of past experiences that might not be resolved currently. And then we base how we interact with you for the rest of the night based on that split-second assessment, when all we actually needed was for you to simply tell us and define in a way that we could easily understand for the rest of the night. Students, you can do this with your roommates and your parents as well. You don't have spouses, from my understanding. So, anyway, this skill isn't just something to write about in that journal that you have, because we're going to be building off of this skill for the next couple weeks and hopefully for the rest of your life. So begin the work now and engage with it and practice it. Let's take it one step further. Translate what we just did to your relationship with God. What if you could take your relationship with God to a 2.0 in how you speak with Him? He already knows your emotions. He designed them. He put them in you. But if you don't understand your emotions, there's now a ceiling in which you can connect with Him intimately. Imagine having a heart like a psalmist. Sounds crazy. Imagine having a heart after God's own heart, such as imagine having a heart like David's, especially in Psalm 42 or Psalm 51 or any of these where he just pours it out. My soul pants for you like a deer pants for water. That's the 42 one. Not only have we been given emotions to better communicate more clearly with other people, but also better communicate with God. So while on this media fast, for many of us, we may begin to feel emotions rising, especially what we consider to be those bad emotions. But I want you to imagine for a minute, and to imagine is to have hope, and to have hope is to have a memory of the future. It's a crazy phrase. So imagine the future where when you feel any uneasiness, you address it either within yourself or using assertiveness with the one you feel uneasy with. Imagine having a map to all of your belief and unbelief regarding the promises of God. Dream of greater relationship and intimacy with your families, your children, your spouses. See a future relationship with the Father, the creator of everything and the one who knows the intricacies of your heart. And see that relationship being walked out in the same way that David walked it out. But of course, we got to focus on today. Understand that that journey begins with a single step towards that destination. You've now, if you've thought through it, established your hope, and now you have to take a step towards it. Be real with yourself and understand that the milestones that will need to be reached along the way. Give yourself permission to begin the journey and understand the guilt, shame, and fear that are waiting behind the bushes to try and hold you back from this. Lastly, think about Jesus, a lover who can empathize with everything you're going through because he already did it. A Savior who walks beside you through the valley of the shadow of death and brings you into the desert, which is a place where he has your full attention. Dependence is essential for survival, and the accusers will not follow you there. So how does pain and healing fit into all this? Well, imagine you go to the doctor, you have some sort of infection, and the doctor asks for your symptoms. You reply, my body aches, my head hurts, and I just don't feel right. You're not giving that doctor much to work with, are you? Instead, you go in and you have such a level of awareness of your symptoms that you explain that what your actual fever temperature is, the type of headache you have and where it's stemming from, the specific areas of pain, and what intensity you feel it. Well, the doctor's going to be blown away and have a much better chance of prescribing the correct medicine for whatever infection that you actually have. But healing from our past is very similar. Until we have an understanding of our modern-day symptoms, we can't communicate them with others and with God. We won't begin the healing path, because it will feel like we're simply shooting in the dark, like it would with this doctor. Because my desire is to help you realize that your past has affected your present, to help you reconcile the moment or moments when the hurt began in order to ultimately redeem those situation and relationships, you are going to need to participate in your own rescue. So when I went whitewater rafting in the Grand Canyon a year ago, the boatmen kept saying, "Participate in your own rescue." And we're like, "What does that mean?" He said, "If you fall off the boat, the water is moving at a faster pace than the boat is. So you will get further away. You need to swim towards the boat to participate in your rescue." So I will be expecting each of you to participate in your own rescues. These are not just four talks of feel-good stuff. It's actually sitting at a stoplight when you see the cop car and the ambulance. It's thinking about when you see a cactus on the side of the road, what pain feels like. Looking at people that you necessarily wouldn't invite over to dinner and asking yourself, what is it that's wrong here? What am I feeling that I need to better understand? So in conclusion, a normal response to this, it's a long conclusion. I don't know why I say that right here, but anyway. In conclusion, a normal response to this topic and a normal response when you actually begin to sit and feel your emotions would be to experience either guilt, shame, or fear. Students just looked at these three topics in our last Tuesday Bible study, and we saw how they're killers of progress. Each of us experiences one of these three in our own way. For me, I had guilt, the fact that I was even feeling emotions to begin with, because it was so taboo to even have while growing up. But over time, that guilt shifted into shame because I kept feeling the same emotions and I wasn't making any progress towards believing those promises of God. It was as if the check engine light just kept coming on. But now, having walked through the healing path several times in my own life, and I've reached acceptance on a lot of things on that grieving chart, fear is the killer of progress for me because I don't want to experience the healing path again because of the amount of work and pain involved in walking through a lot of this stuff. If you hit any of these roadblocks in the upcoming week or in the upcoming weeks, I encourage you to ask yourself a popular question that comes up in theophastic counseling sessions, and that is, what are you believing would happen if you moved forward? Taking that to God and asking Him to help you with it. Confess that to God and ask Him to take you further, because only then do you truly become dependent on Him to walk with you and accept you where you're at. And by doing so, it destroys the guilt, shame, and the fear, knowing that you've been purchased by the blood, you're a son on the Most High, and that the Creator of the universe is walking next to you. I also get asked a lot, what's the big deal about emotions? People understand that we are emotionally illiterate as a culture, and they ask, so what? Well, the culmination of everything I've spoken about today can be summed up by saying that we will not achieve oneness with God and oneness with others. That's what's at stake here. John 17, Jesus prays for the disciples and the whole world, asking the Father to make them one as He and the Father are one, so that the world will know that they exist. This call to oneness is only achieved when we better understand ourselves and others at the emotional level and not just the logical level, because oneness requires intimacy. So I want to end by telling you of a recent time in my life where I put all this into practice, so you know it's not just hypotheticals and a bunch of zen and feel-good stuff. So a year and a half ago, the student group doubled in size, which was crazy. It caught a lot of us off guard, myself included. And right before that, we had gone to a summer program in LA that was exhausting. But on top of all that, I myself was exhausted because I had really worked hard leading the group into that summer. And when the summer arrived, I was expecting to be led and taught by others and not have to walk in any type of leadership. But when I got there, not only was I told I'd be a leader, I was the leader amongst leaders. Thanks, Greg. So I didn't receive any rest that summer, and it flowed into the fall semester. I kept feeling that something was off inside of me, but I couldn't actually figure out what it was. I remember talking to a few of the students about it and not being able to define specifically what it was. And then I just was like, I'm going to sit with this and understand it. And so I chose to do something I had never done before, and that was to go to God with empty insight into what the actual problem was. I was expecting the great physician to tell me what was wrong with me, even though I couldn't describe my symptoms. And in real life, that's not possible, but with God, everything is possible. And God is faithful. He did reveal the problem. So after a solid time of prayer, I really felt led to read a chapter in Hudson Taylor's book, Spiritual Secret, that I've been quoting all summer to the students. It's the smallest chapter in the book, and it's actually my favorite because it's Hudson's actual spiritual secret. You read the whole book, and you're like, I don't know if I found what the secret was, because it's so tiny. It's almost like hidden in there. It's a letter he writes to his sister, and that's the secret. Anyway, I got to the last page of the chapter, and I hadn't felt anything, and then suddenly I read that Hudson had been feeling weak. It hit me in an intense way, because this was the first time I was feeling weak. I either always felt strong or prideful, depending on how you define that. So I took this weakness to God, and I began to immediately feel guilt and shame rise up, making me out to be a failure for not believing the promises of God, and in charge of a student group where I needed to be strong, like Joshua. So I did what Fruit to Root says to do. I walked through confession for not believing that my strength comes from the Lord and that I can do nothing apart from Him, and that He's building His church and I simply get to play a small role in a bigger picture. It was such a healing time for me that I ended up feeling peace, which would be a natural fruit of the Spirit, of course. The whole process took only about an hour, and I created a new core memory, if you've seen Inside Out, and to find a new emotion of where when I'm feeling weak again, I'm reminded it's because I'm feeling that all the success rests upon me and I'm a lone soldier expected to succeed in a hostile environment. So my hope for each of you would be to experience a similar healing moment where you isolate a feeling, take it to God, confess what you believe, and ask for help with your unbelief, and allow God to restore you to your true identity. For the next few weeks, we'll be going over what damage is caused when you don't do this time and time again, and the effects it has on your worldview, as well as the way you view relationships with others and with God. These skills only come through practice and repetition. I mean, how many times have we done this? Time and time again. In order to create the student group culture we currently have, it took hearing about it Tuesday nights, discussing it on Thursday nights, diving deeper on Saturday mornings, and engaging in our one-on-one times with each other throughout the week. It felt like all week long we were simply sharing emotions with each other, defining them as a group, and asking people to just sit and feel. But my goal for you, my hope for you, would be that you go throughout the week having a greater awareness of the emotional gauges in your life. You connect with others more in intimacy, and you begin to believe the promises of God and become aware of the promises that you don't believe. Did I stay on par? Excellent. That's what I got. If you got thoughts or questions, I'm happy to answer them afterwards. I'm not an expert, but it's just been something big in my life over the last couple years. And again, we've tried to do it in the student group. I appreciated, Caitlin's not here, but at the winter conference we went to with our sister church in LA, Caitlin's grandma said that she's never seen a group of young people engage at such an emotional level as she saw with us. And I think that's really true. I mean, I go and tour other places, and when I meet other students, it's like, man, yeah, there's just a huge gap and a huge void here. Like, how do you guys ever connect with each other in intimate settings? And so, anyway, if you want a copy of this as well, I'll leave them up here. You can grab one. They're also online. I Googled Soul Words, How We Love, and that's how I found it.